your Sonicast.
DC is chilling.
Your player partner, G-Biz.
And Fab 5 Freddy in the building. We got the legend in the building today, bro.
Look.
Shining.
What's up? I'm happy to be here. I love being up in the Bay.
Oh, man. And you got this brand new project, and I know it's definitely near and dear to a lot of people in the Bay's heart right now.
Yes, sir.
Nah, the Bay's, California, San Fran in specific, is one of the most progressive states, cities dealing with cannabis,
yeah,
taking care of those most victimized. Of course, that's been us, the mm-hmm. black and brown.
Yeah.
But I was really blessed to be able to make this movie, Grass is Greener, live right now on Netflix, and get deep into the history, which I don't think it's ever been told like this. I didn't even know a lot of the stuff that went down until we started really digging and peeling that onion back, you feel me?
So what was something that surprised you in regards to cannabis while you were making Grass is Greener, like just the
so
story?
Much. Really, sadly, how deep the racism was and the reason that the plant was criminalized. You
right.
know?
Mm.
That's why I take it back. I had the idea. I grew up in a jazz household. You know, Max Roach was my godfather. My pops was down in the jazz scene from a kid. You know, as a teenager, you'll see it in the film. I got a record called Reefer Songs mm-hmm. with all these jazz greats singing about the plant in the 20s, 30s, and early 40s. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is crazy. And then as I got the idea and did the research, that was really the reason for the criminalization, that black folks and brown folks were dealing with this plant, particularly in New Orleans where jazz was invented.
Yeah.
It was bringing different people together to come and hear this new American music. And they was afraid that, you know, black guys might get with white girls and all this kind of craziness. Mm-hmm. And so that
the Reefer Madness stuff of the day.
Reefer Madness yeah. kicked in, led by Harry Anslinger. And that literally led to the plant being criminalized. And then they used that as a way to continually target black and brown people, and also the hippies that supported the civil rights and all the stuff that went on. This was
right.
one of the capitals of that, the epicenters in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And they used the drug laws to target people protesting the war, people fighting for equal rights, you feel me? And that still goes on to this day.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Absolutely. We actually have a coworker, a homie here, mm-hmm. whose brother just opened up a dispensary out in Oakland. And
right.
part of his story is the restorative justice piece that,
yes.
that you're speaking to, right?
Yes.
In the film, which is he had a record for marijuana.
Yeah.
And then legalization happens, right? And you have all these folks who don't look like us,
yeah.
who are not of our community,
correct?
Who are making
big
crazy money off
that's
of something
right.
that this brother went to prison for.
That's what's
10 years ago, 15
yeah.
years ago, you know?
That's part of the unfortunate story that states and cities like here are trying to rectify. I sat down and met with Steve D'Angelo, one of the leading cannabis activists. You know, the cat got the long mm-hmm. braids, and he's been on the front lines, you know, for decades, and he's also a successful entrepreneur. His Harborside is a huge cannabis grower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's front line with the activism and trying to get all the people in jail for nonviolent cannabis arrests need to be home right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Me? So that's what we're trying to work on. And thankfully, the film is raising a lot of people's awareness. I'm getting bombarded with people like, what could I do? How could I help? You feel me? I'm like, man, I'm learning while doing, but mm. just really trying to help spread the message.
So do you feel like this film is going to be like influential in helping like the legalization across the nation?
I mean, it seems like it's just waking people up. I
yeah.
didn't make it to do that specifically.
Yeah.
I really knew there was a music connection that I grew up around,
yeah.
having introduced people like Snoop and Cypress Hill and Redman and so many artists on my show in the 90s, they was all about the plant in a real strong way.
Yeah.
And that connects to what jazz musicians did back in the 20s and 30s. There's dozens. Just go on YouTube right now and type in jazz reefer songs. Watch how many come up.
Yeah.
You feel me? These would have been equivalent to being underground because music back then, black music, whatever, most music wasn't really on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So you would hear it in jukeboxes or the band would play it or you go and buy the record. You feel
yeah.
me? You might have one of them old style stereos.
Crank
you know,
it up.
You know,
with the big horn on the top.
Big yeah. horn. You know, the little RCA dog with
yeah.
the head in there. But really, that's really what it was. And you can feel the energy how people were celebrating this plant. Like one of the songs that I feature in the film, Fats Waller sings, and I remember this song as a kid. I'm like, Dad and my pop's friends is like, what does this mean? The song, the opening part of the song is like this. It says, dreamed about a reefer 5 feet long, the mighty mez, but not too strong. You'll be high, but not for long if use a viper. So vipers was weed heads at the time. Mm. And then they said, the mighty mez. Mez was this white dude, believe it or not, that was beloved in Harlem. His name was Mez Mesro,
yeah,
who literally had the best weed in Harlem. He would post up in front of the Apollo and sell joints.
Yeah.
And all the musicians cop from him because he consistently had that good bud.
Yeah. Right.
And my pops and his friends, when I told them when they was kids back in that time frame, they went up there to chip in and brought some weed from Mez.
From Mez.
So they was like, man, he got that next level. You feel me?
Yeah.
So I'll tell little stories like that in the film and just open up. And then there's another cat I get into. This is a hip-hop cannabis legend named Branson. This is a cat from Harlem that consistently had that good Cali weed in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So over 70 records shouted him out. Biggie, The Lox, Method Man, Redman, a who's who of 90s rappers. But it's almost like you right. had to really know when they say, yo, I went uptown and got a jar from Branson. I got that Branson.
Mm-hmm.
You really knew. You knew that Branson meant that's that good weed.
Now, you know what? And I can hear it in a Biggie lyric in my head right
now. Yes, him so, and yeah. Tracy Lee. Yeah. That's, so we get into the Biggie lyrics and we play a bunch of those songs and a bunch of people tell the story about who Branson really was. And then Branson never did no interviews. He's a real hustler. He ain't yeah. trying to
nah, he wasn't trying to be in front and be
shenanigans. Yeah, like a lot of these yeah. clowns right now try to be all over YouTube talking about what they did and all that. Nah, Branson ain't never gave no interviews. But that's my homie. I said, look, B, this is time for you to come and tell this story. And boom. So that's a part of Grass is Greener on Netflix right now. Also, I want to tell you that my cousin, Salam Remy, mm-hmm. super producer, one of the most talented, incredible producers in hip-hop that too few know about. He just stays
low. He
worked with Nas. He worked with the Fugees. He was the main producer for Amy Winehouse, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before she checked out, I got him to do the original music and the score. And then with the incredible beats that you'll hear in the movie, we went and got dope. We got The Lox, Bun B, Mad Cats came to the table to rap and do an album inspired by the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, you can get that on all streaming services right now.
Oh, so you got the album is out and...
No question. All dropped on 420.
For okay, that's what's up.
We ain't playing.
I was like, we man, Fab Five came through with the,
no
with
question.
The whole it. Doc and the whole album on top.
Yeah, the whole presentation. That's how we roll. You feel me?
So name some more of the artists that you have featured on this film. I know you said Snoop, but...
Okay, we got, no, in the film, it's like, oh man, CeeLo Green, mm-hmm. Chuck D, Dougie Fresh, DMC from Run DMC, drop some serious knowledge in the film. Will.i.am is in the movie for a hot second. Everlast is in the movie for a minute. And then really sit down and talk to B-Real, and Send Dog from Cypress, who was all about that plant.
Yeah.
You know
right.
what I mean? Snoop opens up and tells a story about how he gave Dre the title for his solo album, The Chronic. You feel me? So Snoop breaks down how that happened, and he gets deep in how he started dealing with the plant.
Uh-huh.
And how he feels about the war on drugs.
Yeah.
He goes in, baby.
Yeah. And Junior Gong, too. Didn't want you able to sit down
Damian
with,
Junior Gong is a big part of the movie. Thank you. I go to Jamaica.
What?
I get Bunny Wailer in the movie.
Yeah.
Who comes at me kind of strong. I ain't going to tell you how that went down. But Bunny Wailer, like, put me in check. I'm like, okay. I left it in the movie. But I get in that because, once again, cutting edge people in music were the people on the forefront, advocates about the plant. You know, Peter Tosh is... Legalize It was over 40 years ago he dropped that song. Legalize It and I Will Advertise It. You feel me? And he talks about the medical benefits of the plant over 40 years ago. So these are things that the government knew. Medical doctors, they commissioned tests themselves. Mm-hmm. Richard Nixon did. When the test came back that nothing was wrong with this weed, it's even some benefits to it, he was like, threw that away and then doubled down on people of color and people fighting against the war, et cetera, et cetera. So I get the info. I go to Washington. I'm digging through the files.
Yeah.
I get the archival, whatever, and I'm just laying it out.
Open it up
for so people.
We're still talking about the plant being federally illegal, though, right?
Yeah.
and how there are some states who are absolutely, you know, saying, okay, well, you know what, we understand and we're not going to hide this anymore. And it's general knowledge that there are some benefits to marijuana, especially at a time when we're dealing with things like the opioid crisis and all of that, right?
Yes.
So some states are being super open to it and other ones are cutting off. Like, do you feel like eventually everybody else is going to have the honest moment and just saying like, okay, you know what, if you want to smoke in Mississippi, it's fine. You know?
Haha, smoke in Mississippi. That's a good point. Because,
that want to make you laugh.
No, because what I found in doing the research, which was really shocking, is in the South, there are some states that are profiting tremendously from people being stacked on top of each other in these prisons.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so we get into one really sad, very dramatic case of a black man in Louisiana that was given 14 years for two joints of cannabis.
What?
So this, unfortunately, is going on. He was a case that had gotten some media,
attention.
So we saw it.
Yeah.
We said, man, should we look at this one? Because we wanted to find a dramatic case to give an example, and that was something that blew me away. And then I don't even want to tell you how that transpires in the movie, but please watch, because that's the tip of an iceberg in the southern states of how they're still treating us.
Yeah.
This is that prison industrial complex, that for-profit prison system is functioning in a major way, and the primary people that they're getting are nonviolent cannabis users.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me? But unfortunately, like in the film, I talked to this former prosecutor that talks about that guy's case, and like I ask him, what happens to somebody if they're walking down Bourbon Street smoking a joint? He says he sees that all the time. If it's a white guy, typically they just get like a citation, a slap on the wrist. Mm. If it's a black kid, they putting them through the system.
Hmm.
And that's cost, either he got a couple of thousand to deal with it and get out and get it thrown out, or he's copping out to 20, 30, 40 days, jamming himself up with a conviction, dropping further down the ladder in terms of getting a job or doing whatever. So that's permanently almost crippling people. And so that's what has been going on. I just wasn't prepared to realize how crazy it was, you know. So Grass is Greener touch on a lot of that in the Netflix doc.
Now, being from New York, how has it been just growing up being a cannabis enthusiast yourself and being in the city where, I mean, you can't even spit without somebody looking at you like you about to get a ticket. Like,
true. It's funny, like, it was a lot. I mean, pretty much the police could put you through it. I didn't realize that since the 70s in New York, cannabis had been decriminalized. The same thing in Louisiana. If a cop catches you smoking a joint or whatever, he can give you a citation.
Yeah.
But if they want to put you through the system, they could arrest you, throw you in the joint, and then you got to go through that whole thing. And that, unfortunately,
if you got the money to go through that.
Right. But disproportionately, over 80, 85% over the last 20 years of those arrests have been people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what's going on. And, you know, it's really a shame that it's happening. Now, what has gumped up? One of the people in my film who's got a really strong voice, her name is Cassandra Frederique. Mm-hmm. This is a sister that's the New York State Director of Drug Policy Alliance. They're one of the leading organizations that's fighting, that's giving you all the facts, shutting down all the BS that, you know, fake politicians or whack politicians is trying to tell us. It's a gateway drug and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's the on the front line lobbying and whatever. So I didn't realize how deeply she was connected to the New York State political, you know, local politics, whatever. And they now are going through trying to get a bill passed so we can be like you guys here in Cali. But everybody's not on deck.
Yeah.
You feel me? So they went crazy with the film. They asked me to come up to Albany a few weeks ago to screen it for about 50 New York State senators and assemblymen.
Mm-hmm.
And they are all asking for screenings in their districts so they can get people in line with like supporting them, because we got until June 19th to get it right. If not, it won't get passed in New York and they'll have to wait another year. But it's crazy because you got all these cornballs now who's trying to jump in the game and just get their paper right. And trying to, you know, and they clamoring to get that money.
Yeah.
People that didn't have nothing to do with the plant forever and ever. And so if the politicians don't come together right, and the governor and everything, then they're going to shut it down. So the film has helped bring people closer together around these issues, because the film just lays out all the history and facts.
Well, thank you for making it, because part of part of things changing, right, is people getting the right story and the right narrative, being able to go out and advocate for themselves.
Yes.
Because once folks and California is a probably a prime example, right, of people just saying like, nah, we not about to do this no more.
Exactly. And that's what's so great about California. I mean, a lot of the, it's one of the most progressive states. I'm always looking and seeing what's happening. I mean, come on. But that was one of the things that also hit me when the idea came about. California put medical in effect early, mid-90s, mm-hmm. around the same time when Snoop and these guys were hitting hard on my show. And it was just, not that it had a direct correlation, but in terms of the timing, it was just like that time that Snoop and these guys are loud and proud about the plant. And the California just said, look, man, medical, which pretty much was like, everybody.
Yeah, you can get a card.
Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah, That's what I was like, man, this is incredible. Like, being up in New York, when I'd come out here, I'd have cats run, yo, man, get me up, give me this, give me that. And then interesting story, too, about the first time I heard the name Jack Herrera, mm-hmm. it was a strain that a buddy had got me at a dispensary in L.A. And, the smoke was dope. I mean, no pun intended.
Right, yeah.
I mean, literally. And I'm like, wow. And then my man said, yeah, this guy Jack Herrera bred this strain. One of his loved ones had cancer or whatever. And I don't remember, his wife or something. I was like, wow, that's a dope-ass story. Now jump cut to doing the research for the film, and specifically when I'm talking to Be Real in the movie, Be Real is like, when Cypress Hill formed, he was like, we could have just been a stoner group, because that's who they were.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then they said they had read Jack Herrera's book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, which basically broke down a lot of stuff that I get into, how there were official medical studies that proved the plant was harmless relative to, whatever, and it was some benefits going on in there, what have you, how it was used to, like, harass black folks and brown folks over the years. So they said that we are now going to be activists as well with the plant. So Jack Herrera is one of the first people to really break down what the government had been doing to lie, to spread misinformation. And so groups like Cypress Hill stepped out there and like, we're gonna give you the real story, so to speak. You feel me? And so now, and it's blessings to them just getting their star on the Walk of Fame, and cannabis being legal in Cali. Those were the dudes that were on the front line. So the musicians really were out there fighting this fight with their broad audience. Because Cypress even talks about they a lot, because they were so vocal about it, they blew a lot of opportunities too.
People, right?
You know. Drugs and all that. Mm-hmm. Made it seem like they was slinging heroin practically.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's unfortunately the way cannabis is scheduled, which I break down in the movie. This schedule thing, which was set up, it's cannabis is on the same category as heroin in terms of how it's put on the list of being illegal.
Crazy.
I mean, it's crazy.
Right.
So it shows like politicians use it. Like one of the people in the film, Asha Bandele, she says, the government can no longer write race into the law, but they can write drugs into the law. See, so they use that as a way to continue to pressure folks of color.
Yeah.
And, I'm pulling the covers off a lot of that. And there's more to know. And, you start Googling, it all comes up.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, you ain't got to Google. Exactly. They ain't got to Google, because you already set it up for them.
Yeah, I laid it out for you with the pictures and the music.
Now, I do want to tap in. Going back to Yo MTV Raps and connecting this whole cannabis thing that we talking about.
Yeah.
Who was probably the dopest artist, person that you remember yourself hanging out with and just blowing a joint with?
Oh, man. Ha ha. That would have to be Snoop. I directed Snoop's first video.
Did
What's
you?
My Name?
Okay.
I directed over 70 videos back in my day while hosting. My first video was My Philosophy for KRS-One. I did One Love for Nas just to get a rep for Gangstar. Like, I'm deep in that behind the camera game.
Yeah.
And, tight with Dr. Dre, who Fab come on and do Snoop's first video.
Uh-huh.
And Snoop was just, smoking that good and turning me on. That Chronic was the name of the dope strain at that time.
Yeah.
And so puffing with him was a special thing. There was one show we did in that period, a whole show with the Dog Pound, where I typically would never smoke before a show. And even with me with the shades on, Snoop had some chocolate tie, and we all passed that thing around, man, when by the time the show hit.
Right. You can see, the red in your eyes through the glasses.
Like, people say, damn, Fab, you really seem stoned. I'm like, oh my God, I was. And then the other person, we didn't do this on the air, like whatever, but like Biggie was a blunt chain smoker.
He blunt would have chain smoker?
I mean, he just would burn them blunts. I'm a guy, like, when the blunt comes around, I'm going to take a few hits and that's it.
Yeah.
Biggie would, like, burn them down. He'd be burning them down. And then C's would be twisting and he'd be hit me, you know. Like, he was, some people have different
tolerances.
They chain smoke blunts. I'm a couple of hit guy and I'm going to sit it down for a minute and I'm going to hit it again. You feel me?
I got one in me. Pass me for the one puff, and then I'm lightweight.
It depends on what you wrapped it in. You know, if we smoking backwards, I go shot for shot with you, but I can't do it on the switchers though. They'll tear me up.
Look at that, right?
Really, you know,
so, that's crazy.
That's,
man,
what's up. But, yeah. I mean, and just looking at just like your profile and all the work that you've done, the folks that you've worked with, I mean, it's amazing, man. It's just your track record has just been great.
And
I mean, so we got the documentary. What's more to come for Fab Five Freddy?
Well, you know, film has always been a passion for me. I mean, this is the first long-form piece I've directed. I've always got film. And then I make art. I'm a painter. I make art. I'm one of those guys that have exhibits and show my work and I'm collected. So I'm just a serial creative, man. I just got to be making stuff all the time.
I did see when I was just Googling some stuff, as you alluded to earlier, that Basquiat's name popped up next to
yours. Jean-Michel Basquiat. That was my partner. We was running shit early and really tight friends back in the early 80s. We were both trying to figure out how to be artists together. We both had similar, you know, connections, both from Brooklyn, both about the same age, and we both, you know, hit the trenches together to try to figure out a way to make it happen. And Jean just had incredible, brilliant, prodigy-like skills as a painter. It caught on really quickly.
You didn't paint? You didn't take no painting lessons?
No. We didn't take no lessons. I mean, I'm one of those people that used to do graffiti on the trains. I'm one of the first people to do it on the trains, on the walls, just straight graffiti, vandalism, bombing, that wanted to show my work in galleries. Yeah. You feel me? As a kid, I used to cut school and go to museums in New York City and got fascinated with the idea of art and very comfortable with it. So it clicked at some point that what pop artists had did was similar to what graffiti was doing. Like, graffiti was inspired by product, advertising, bold colors, comic books, cartoon characters, superheroes. So I was like, wait a minute, like, pop art is inspired by that. Graffiti artists were inspired by that. So I was like, man, what we're doing is art. So then I kind of restructured, looked at a lot of art books. I had already gone to a lot of museums.
Yeah.
And then I took myself to the downtown part of Manhattan where a lot of punk rock and new wave people were. And that's where I connected with the people from the group Blondie. And they made this record. And I was telling them about what I'm trying to do and this new sound that was still in the streets, in the hood, Bronx, Harlem, no records out. But I'm telling, there's something new bubbling that I feel is connected to the punk rock energy. It was a different kind of music, but the energy was a rebellious, like, we going to break into the street light, wire up our sound system and just party in the street. You feel me? I'm just going to paint that wall because I want to, you feel me? That was the attitude. So it was real wild and renegade, trust me, in the beginning. And nobody was saying nothing nice about black and brown people doing that. We were the scourge and the most hated elements of the city. They were spending $10 million a year to clean the graffiti off the trains.
Damn.
So we was like, boom. But then I'm stepping out like, yeah, that's what I do, but I'm an artist, and nobody was checking for us. But them people on the punk rock new wave scene gave me a lot of love. Mm-hmm. That's where I connected with Jean-Michel. He was like, yo, you know, we knew that there was some love there and some support. So they mentored us, so to speak. Blondie and them brought my paintings, and then they made a record called Rapture and shouted me out.
Yeah.
And really, a lot of the stuff that she's talking about on the record is things I was telling her. Like, you know, we got the fly guys and fly girls, and Flash is the fastest DJ and all that. So she just put it together in her own way.
That's crazy.
and it became the first number one record to have a little rap in it, you know. The publicist over here that brought me here was telling me, oh my God, I was a little girl, I used to sing the record. Rapture, that was the first rap I heard. I'm like, thank you.
That's dope.
Thank you.
That's what's up. Yeah, well, man, I mean, we appreciate you for coming through, man. And definitely, me, you know, just tell folks all over again, like, Grass is Greener, it's on Netflix, and go ahead and check out the soundtrack.
Please.
Yeah.
And KMEL, I want to tell y'all, back in the days, this was one of the dopest stations. I'm sure it still is. I haven't
back
listened
in the
to
days. Yeah.
Well, I mean, when I first heard about it, back in the days, 80s, 90s, this was one of the dopest stations with the best black music overall. I mean, just music in general.
Yeah.
But
KMEL,
when a lot of radio stations were still on that segregated playlist, they wasn't really giving a lot of love, you feel me?
Mm-hmm.
I remember everybody would talk about KMEL, seriously. So it's an honor to be up in here with y'all.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming and sitting down
thank
with us, legend.
Thank
appreciate you,
man. Grass is greener, y'all. Pay your Netflix bill and check me out. Feel me?
You know you got that $12.99.
Do it.
$12?